From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, Gunachish, Hawa, Toyaksak Nusum, Salamat for joining the conversation. On today's show, our celebration of music during the 49th Alaska Folk Festival continues. Today, we'll have Kennedy Joe live in studio. Plus, we'll hear about the Glory Hall's upcoming fundraiser, Empty Bowls. Judo Audubon has a special presentation on marmots tomorrow night. And Juno saw its first cruise ship yesterday, marking the beginning of the summer tourism season. We'll check in with KTOO reporter Clarice Larson. Those conversations, plus savory moment and more, coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO, 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Joining me now live in the studio is KTOO reporter Clarice Larson. Gunachish Yigudi. Thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure to have you, Clarice. Wasiati, how's it going?
I'm doing good. How are you, Boston?
I'm good. Now, I just want to mention this before we start, but if you missed last week's Curious Juno, Clarice covered basically, where's the fast food chain restaurants in Juno? So I just wanted to give a plug for that. You can visit kto.org/curious or subscribe to Curious Juno in your podcast app of choice. But we're here today for a quick check-in on tourism. Clarice, so yesterday we saw our first cruise ship land in Juno, which means another summer of tourism in Alaska has started. So I guess one of the big questions on everybody's mind is, what can we expect this year in terms of visitors?
Of course, yeah. So yesterday we had the Norwegian Bliss come, 7 a.m. So I was up and early chatting with those passengers. And yeah, you know, last year we saw the busiest season ever, and with 1.6 million passengers. And this year we can expect the same number. You know, one big change coming this year is that we're going to have the five large ships per day limit. Although a limit on the number of ships doesn't necessarily mean fewer passengers.
Right. Okay. So, and I know at some point, at certain days last year, we had like upwards of 21,000 visitors in town on one day. And so that's like 2/3 of our population. Mm-hmm. So now this 5-ship limit, like you mentioned, is sort of now a thing, but there's also going to be some future talk now about like the potential of limiting not just the number of ships, but the actual number of passengers that can come in. But that's like a couple years down the line,
yeah.
Right?
So it was last week on Saturday, or maybe it was a little bit before then, the city announced that they're in the early stages of negotiating with cruise lines to limit the number of passengers that come off their ships each day. Now, that agreement is far from final, but if approved, the limits would go into effect in the 2026 season. But we don't know the numbers yet. We don't know how many people is gonna, you know, could be limited right now. So it's very preliminary and conceptual at this point.
I see. And of course, we know that April, it starts out pretty slow. 1 to 3 ships a week. That first one yesterday, the next one doesn't come for a little bit. And then we'll ramp up in the middle of May to that up to 5 ships. And then it runs basically through late October now when it winds down again. And I also know that you had done some reporting recently on some of the problems that we had last year, just in terms of there was like the public Wi-Fi idea, and there was, you know, some stuff about buses and making sure that locals could still use routes? And so are there some problems being solved this summer around those couple issues?
Yeah, so right now there is some dispute going on between marine passenger fee funding, and that's the money that the city takes in from East Passenger that comes to Juneau. And there's some I guess dispute going on about some of the projects the city is wanting to do, and CLIA, Cruise Line Agencies of Alaska, they don't like a few of them, and so the city and them are working together to try to figure that out. But
negotiating, as it were.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I think in one of your stories I saw that they are increasing the number of bus routes during some of the summer to sort of help alleviate some of that problem.
Yeah, but that's one of the projects that's being disputed right now.
Oh, so, I see. Okay.
That's kind of up in the air. We don't know what that's going to look like. It depends on the city budget process, and if the assembly chooses to fund those projects despite CLIA's, you know, objections to some of them, mm-hmm. or if they're going to not fund those and you know, side with CLIA on their objections to that funding.
I see. Okay. Now, I also heard that there's a movement that's happening this coming weekend to try to limit to put a proposal on a ballot to make it so that we don't have Saturday ships. What's that all about?
Yeah. So yesterday, right when the cruise ship passengers were heading back to the ship to leave Juneau, a group of activists in Juneau filed some paperwork yesterday in hopes of putting a question on the 2024 local election ballot about whether the capital city should enforce, you know, quote, ship-free Saturdays. So what does that mean? It would essentially ban all cruise ships that carry 250 or more passengers from visiting Juneau, both on Saturdays and on the 4th of July. It's a proposed ballot initiative, and there's a few steps that they need before it can actually get onto the ballot, right? The group has, once the clerk certifies it, the city clerk certifies the initiative, the group has 30 days to collect 2,400 signatures in order to get it onto the ballot for voters to, you know, to decide on.
I see. Okay. So that's something that you'll be following as it goes on. Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And, of course, you can follow all of Clarice's reporting at ktoo.org. And I did want to mention this, too, that if you have feedback for the city, residents can send in complaints or concerns to the tourism hotline, and you can find that information online. But it's also, the number is 907-586-6774. Or you can send an email to hotline@traveljuneau.com. And those are a couple ways that you can get feedback to the city if you have concerns about some of the issues with tourism. So Clarice, thank you so much, Gunathish, for letting us know a little bit about summer tourism. It's here, which means, I guess, good weather, as well as a lot of other people in our town supporting and building our economy up. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, I hope good weather is on the way.
We hope, yes. After all that snow that we had. So, yeah, good enough cheese for that. Okay, yeah, like I said, follow more of Clarice's reporting at ktoo.org. Good enough cheese for Clarice Larson coming in. Up next, live music and a chat with Kennedy Joe, who will be on the Folk Fest main stage this weekend. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
The Alaska Folk Festival is here. Listen all week on your public radio station, KRNN Juneau. We'll be broadcasting the main stage concerts live on 102.7 and 103.1 FM, or tune in online. Once again, we'll be offering a live video feed on our website. So update your presets and bookmark the links, because we don't want you to miss a minute of the main stage. Find everything you need to watch or listen at ktoo.org/folkfest.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clenidé have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages, and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO.com.
Baby, I cry at the drop of your hat, but don't you overthink it. I don't think I love you like that. My body craves attention, can hear it calling if you listen. Should probably ease up on the drinking, but it's my only ammunition. The world feels cold, but big man is burning it away, and everybody's burning bridges. Not a place I'd like to stay. I think I need to learn to spend some real time alone. I give it up too early. I'm too young to feel this old. So darling, would you help me drown out all my demons? I won't practice your religion, but give me something to believe in. Can I relight the fire? All my bones have turned to embers. Could you be my reminder? 'Cause I'm surrounded by pretenders. You say we both know something you can't vocalize. You can't put me in the boxes, can never see through my disguise. Afraid I won't remember who I was before I tried on. All these costumes in the mirror got me searching for the right ones. You don't have the answers, but none of your kind really do. You're disillusioned with my sad eyes. Soon you'll be off to someone new. So honey, in the limbo that we're poorly navigating, let's put our favorite mask on, out of sight of all this shaming. And darling, would you help me drown out all my demons? I won't practice your religion, but give me something to believe in. Can I relight the fire? All my bones have turned to embers. Could you be my reminder? 'Cause I'm surrounded by
Whoa, that is awesome. That is Kennedy Joe live here in the studio, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Billed as Sad Songs from Deep in the Valley, Kennedy will be on the main stage this Sunday at Folk Fest. You can get the entire Folk Fest schedule at akfolkfest.org. It's all over at the Centennial Hall, and of course, you can catch it all here, too, as well on KRNN Live every night, or stream it on ktoo.org/folkfest. Kennedy, Gwyneth Cheesh, Ha Yi Gudi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasa Iati, how's it going?
Thanks for having me, Boston. It's going great. Happy Folk Fest.
Happy Folk Fest, absolutely. And I know you were also on the Monday night Hydrate and Caffeinate.
Yeah.
You were there for that inaugural kickoff. We had a whole bunch of information about that on the show yesterday. And then you're going to be sort of, so you're like bookmarking the festival, right? The first night and then the last night.
Yeah,
right?
Let's say that. That sounds awesome. I'm playing 8:15 on the main stage on Sunday.
And Dan Kirkwood is going to be up there as well.
With you?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, get some electric guitar going on.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, kind of fill out that sound a little bit.
And that'll be really right fun. Before Lori Lewis, the guest artist. A little bit. I mean, you're like a couple segments before, but that big, the Sunday night's a big night.
Definitely, yeah. My stomach flipped a little bit when I initially saw the list get posted on the Folk Fest website that it was, so close to icon Lori Lewis there.
Does it make you a little nervous?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I think you can get used to playing in front of people and playing with people and kind of making that feel safe and comfortable. But then there's just something about, at least for me, playing songs that I've written in front of people. Always just kind of is that slightly deeper, more vulnerable aspect to it. So I think that's more the kind of like, oof. Yeah. There's going to be people sitting there.
There will be people.
Wild.
Yeah, that's good. And what was that song called that we just heard?
That's called Pretenders.
Okay, and that's one of your songs?
It is, yeah. That was from, probably like June 2020 is when that one came together. So just, normal, happy times.
Normal pandemic time, creative juices.
Exactly, yeah. Got a little dark there. But that's from back then, just kind of came together on a dreary afternoon.
Oh, wow, that's so cool. Now, you are... fairly new to Juno, yeah?
Yes. Yeah, my partner and I moved here last summer. Actually last year during Folk Fest, we got to be here, but we were working out housing stuff. So we were here for Folk Fest and then went back to South Central. He was in Valdez, I was in Anchorage, and then made our way back by June and July. So it's been really nice to be here. And now kind of coming into this spring and summer, it feels... I guess more real now that we're kind of focusing less on house projects and the moving in and getting settled and more able to kind of take part in all the awesome community stuff going on. And Folk Fest feels like a really great way to kick off this new season and in a new place.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So you came from South Central up from Anchorage way?
Yep. Yeah, I was living in Anchorage. I grew up just north of there in Eagle River, Chugach area and moved to Minnesota for school and then was back in Anchorage for the past 5 years or so.
I see.
And
what brought you to Juno? Just the lovely Southeast?
My partner's job. And yes, of course. I've been meant to come to Juno. It's been lovely to be here. And it was lovely to kind of have that reason to up and shift things down this direction.
That's so cool. And so what's your background in music? How did you get started? Was it when you were a little kid? Or
I did start playing piano when I was about 7. That was more kind of, I did that through high school. So it was kind of more classical piano stuff. But then got into in middle school and high school. I was total band kid, choir kid. But then didn't start writing and really, or even like playing music to sing with it until, probably late high school. And then honestly, after college, was when I wrote most of my songs that you'll hear around. I don't share some of the other ones that were written back around that time. But
those early years of poetry that we all kind of keep hidden.
Exactly. There's some journals sitting somewhere, I'm sure. But I've only really been into it the last like 5 years or so of playing and singing my own songs and... doing more covers and things like that.
I love that. So how does inspiration strike you?
That's a good question. really randomly, it seems, and at very inconvenient times. So there's lots of little, voice memos and notes on my phone from walking in the grocery store or like about to fall asleep moments. But when I'm going outside and spending time in the woods and by myself and like either on a run or on a hike is actually most often where something will just kind of get in my head and stick there. And I'll have either, that notes page full of like random little snippets of poetry that I'll kind of try to stick that melody to sometimes. And other times it just sort of shows up more fully formed. And I'd say it's a little all over the place, but that one is probably most consistent where I'm outside moving around and my brain is on something else and kind of empty, and then something else just kind of shows up in there.
Yeah, it's interesting, the creative process, isn't it? Like just how it works, because it's sort of chaotic in a lot of ways. Like I know there's some people who are, like some writers sit down and they have a schedule, they work from 10 to 1 every day and they do, whatever they do. And then some people are like, no, I just write whenever it strikes me or whenever the inspiration strikes. And interesting talking to musicians because there's many components, right? There's the lyrics, but then there's also the music.
Totally.
And so, like, how does it, you know, does a melody sort of, like you said, like you're running and all of a sudden you hear sort of like a bip bop, a doop bop, a doop bop, or something.
Exactly.
Right?
That,
and you're
yeah.
like, oh, I, yeah, exactly that. And then you're like, oh, I got to get home and get that melody down. And then, or maybe you have, like, yeah, I guess like certain random snippets of poetry or a couple lines here or there. And then you kind of, do you work with somebody or does it for you, does it sort of all come together for yourself? Like, do you bounce it off people or how does that work?
I'll bounce it off like a couple very close friends towards the end of something coming together. But I'm pretty to myself about it until something is mostly formed.
I see.
I think I just throw around so many. I kind of just throw a lot at the wall and see what sticks a lot of the time. And so I think most songs go through a lot of phases and not all of them are very good.
Well, you know, it's interesting too, because I think there's that idea of keeping the fire within. Mm-hmm. Like, because if you, you know, there's the joke about, oh, I can't show you the painting until it's done. Right.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's sort of accurate because it's such a precious place and also a very sensitive place mm-hmm. as an artist to be sort of, especially if you're playing songs like you're playing, which are revealing, right? Mm-hmm. And they're coming from you and from your life and mm-hmm. whatever. And like that to get feedback on that too early might impinge on the process.
Totally, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think that some of it too is that it feels very intimate and personal when you're writing a song that's about me. And a few of my songs too aren't about me necessarily. And it's just sort of a story of someone else or someone that doesn't exist that I want to tell. But the ones that are about me and from my own experience, it feels like I want to keep it to myself also, almost like it's, I don't know if I'd call it like a friend, but there's like an intimacy there that I want to just be between me and what I'm writing for a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
That totally makes sense. So now when you moved here, had you already sort of been aware of the music scene in Juneau, or have you discovered, obviously, Kirkwood has become sort of a music friend.
Yeah.
And it seems like the community here is very open and welcoming, but how did you find those folks?
Totally. I had spent some time back and forth to Juneau for work a few years ago, and my partner had lived here before. And so we were kind of aware of, you know, folks that were playing music down here. And having been here for like Folk Fest and just kind of knowing about the arts community down here, I was really excited to get down here and meet people and kind of share in that space a bit. But yeah, the Muskeg Collective actually did a house show in Anchorage like a couple months before I moved, I think. And I went by myself and just was like, hello, can we all be friends, please?
Yeah.
And yeah, I think through Dan and through those folks and then through the Getting Strangers too, being part of that is just kind of like, I think sped up that process of like getting to know people that play music in town. And I think also just as spring is happening and everybody is kind of emerging and Folk Fest is happening and more shows are happening, like it's been really cool to kind of see everybody come out and yeah, just be so welcoming and kind across the board. And I've not felt any sort of like hesitation to sharing music and yeah, sharing that space, which is really nice and I think says a lot about the community.
Wow. Yeah, that's for sure. I think it's such a welcoming community. I love hearing all of the music, and I'm imagining that, you know, Folk Fest is a good sort of cross collaboration time where you're meeting people who are coming to Juneau, but also getting together with all the people in Juneau.
Totally.
And just sort of having that sort of wonderful feeling of playing music together, right? And that's such a joy.
Yeah.
So where can we follow you? How do we find your music? Do you have an Instagram or?
I have just my personal Instagram, which is Kennedy Joe, J-O. And I'm going to try to be a little better about sharing music on there. I don't have anything like officially recorded anywhere, but yeah, I'm hoping to play more around town too, just as spring and summer come out and more opportunities like that arise. This Friday night, the Getting Strangers, that honky tonk country band of ours, is playing the Crystal, if that's anybody's scene.
So you're in that band as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Which has been awesome.
Yeah.
And that's Seth Hooper and Andrew Heist and Ben Hickman and Dan Kirkwood and Josh Fortenberry and Clay Good. So an awesome crew of very great musicians. And yeah, so we're at 8 p.m. at the Crystal on Friday opening for Reeb and Caleb, which is also going to be an incredible show. And then Saturday, get to play at Amalga for, they have their, they're doing their jam band event during the day. But in the evening, there's a smaller kind of show that Dan Kirkwood and I are going to play at. And then, yeah, on Sunday on the main stage at 8:15, those are my next few days.
Love it. That's great. That is so cool. Kennedy Joe, would you mind playing us one more song?
Yes, thank you. This is actually my dear friend Kara Wilson wrote this song, and she's definitely the person who I've shared the most music with for the longest, and I'm excited to get to share this one.
Absolutely. Okay, as you get to the mic, I'll remind everyone that you can find Kennedy Joe on Instagram at Kennedy Joe, K-E-N-N-E-D-Y-J-O. And Kennedy will be on the main stage this Sunday at 8:15 at the Alaska Folk Festival. And, of course, you can find the full schedule at akfolkfest.org. Here's Kennedy Joe.
Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Daddy's gonna catch you with the mockingbird. You can tell a white lie, but the devil keeps his word. Cold-hearted daughter fell so in love with the midnight hour. Watch the world as it turns sour. And trust ash and dust, cold-hearted daughter. And no, don't you know, there was bloodshed for your soul. Oh, sister, can't you see that you don't have to run from me? Thunder rolls without a crash of lightning. Can't expect a lady to do a man's kind of fighting. Ribbons and curls, boys and words, cold-hearted daughter. Run as fast and as far as you may, but the light still ends at the end of the day, and the soles fall out of your shoes anyway, you cold-hearted daughter. And oh, don't you know, if there was bloodshed for your soul. Oh, sister, can't you see that you don't have to run from me? To gray, her home is where she's born. She's not meant to stay, and I know it ain't fair, but she just don't care. She's a cold-hearted daughter. No, don't you know that there was bloodshed for your soul? Sister, can't you see that you don't have to run from me?
Yeah. Kennedy Joe, everybody. Thank you so much, Kennedy. Really appreciate it. Kennedy Chiefs for coming in today. Up next, Empty Bowls is back. It's a fundraiser for the Glory Hall. We'll get all the details next here on Juno Afternoon from KTOO. But first, a savory moment.
Step in to the savory moment. The next time you're nonplussed over what to make for dinner, let a local chef do what they do best, cook for you. Here are four Alaskans recently nominated for the prestigious James Beard Award, the culinary industry's highest decoration. In Anchorage, visit Nathan Bentley at Altura Bistro, where dinner can be anything from filet mignon burgers with Szechuan pepper oil and double creme brie to nachos made with golden Kaluga Reserve caviar. Start with a house-made sourdough ciabatta and basil butter. Another Anchorage-based nominee, restaurateur Lael Fairbairn has got you covered with her collection of eateries, 5 of them. If you're looking for a vegan feast, South Restaurant and Coffee Bar features garlicky mushrooms dusted with Spanish paprika, cornmeal crusted cauliflower tacos, and fried Brussels sprouts with poblano aioli. Lots of fantastic meat and seafood options here too, including beef short ribs with smoked tomatoes. Southeast saw 2 Best Chef nominations recently. Renee Trafton at Beak Restaurant in Sitka is famous for her seafood offerings, like rockfish coated in a crunchy, popping layer of everything bagel spices and a chapeau of pickled bull kelp and mustard aioli. Equally beloved, her massaged kale salad with candied pecans, macerated berries, and rosemary vinaigrette. Also in Southeast, Bo Schooler of In Boca Lupo in downtown Juneau. Clouds of locally grown basil are just a start here, flavoring house-made pastas and brick oven pizzas. Note this recent Instagram post. A wood-fired king salmon steak, 16 ounces, blanketed with a white wine cream sauce and finished with a generous scattering of bright orange salmon roe pearls. Hungry yet? Find all 4 Alaska-based James Beard nominees at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Shortroads. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
You are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The annual fundraiser Empty Bowls is back in person at Centennial Hall on Sunday, April 21st. It all goes to benefit the Glory Hall Shelter and Soup Kitchen. There's going to be some live music, silent auctions, dessert auctions, and of course, beautiful bowls from local artisans and delicious soups. Tickets are available at jahc.org. And more info on the Glory Hall can be found at housejuno.org. Joining me now via Zoom is Maria Lovishuk, Executive Director of Juno Housing First Collaborative. Gunath Cheesh, Ha'i Gudi. Thank you so much for joining me. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasa'iati, how's it going?
Thank you so much for having me, Boston.
Yeah, so where are you right now?
I am actually at the Housing First Partners Conference in Atlanta. And this is a conference that takes place every 2 years. And this is where providers of permanent supportive housing, such as us, gather every year to talk about strategies, talk about how to tackle the housing crisis, which is not unique to Juno at all, how to figure out how to fund their housing projects. And so it's just, it's really, it's a very special conference and it's really good to be here.
Yeah, I'm sure you're getting a lot of warm, good vibes there in terms of, you know, helping and all the warmth that comes out of doing that kind of service and meeting people who are in the same field as you.
It's really like pretty amazing to be in a room full of people that provide housing to folks who like really need it and who really believe that housing is a human right, and also housing solves homelessness. So yeah, it's really pretty amazing.
That's really good. So let's remind folks about the Glory Hall. I think most people in Juneau know of the Glory Hall. We know that you moved recently, and tell us a little bit about the mission of the Glory Hall overall.
So the mission of the Glory Hall is to provide food, shelter, and compassion to those most in need. But the mission of our overall organization is to provide housing to people and connect people to services and help people achieve well-being through housing. And so in 2021, the Glory Hall and Housing First merged. And so the Glory Hall is an emergency shelter. We have 43 little rooms and 12 overflow bunks for people who are in emergency crisis and need shelter. And then we provide breakfast, lunch, and dinner 3 times a day. And then we also have 64 units of permanent supportive housing And this is where people who are the highest utilizers of our emergency services, hospitals, emergency room, interactions with other emergency services, receive permanent supportive housing in our really wonderful building in Lemon Creek.
That is amazing. That's really awesome. Now, if someone was in need of the services, what's the best way for someone in need, or if somebody knows someone in need, to get in touch? Is there a phone number? Is it a website? What's the easiest way?
Yeah, people should call 907-586-4159 if they are in need of emergency shelter. And their website is www.housejuno.org. To get into the Forget-Me-Not Manor Apartments, it's actually a collaborative community process where folks who work at the hospital, folks who work at the shelters, community behavioral health providers get together whenever there's an opening, and they recommend the person who is the most vulnerable to move in into that building. And so that process is a little bit more rigorous. But 907-586-4159 is the number to call to begin the process.
Okay, that's great. And so let's talk about Empty Bowls, which is that the largest fundraiser for the Glory Hall?
It is actually our only fundraiser.
The only?
Other than our annual letter, yes. Well, people really support our mission, which is like really wonderful, and we're so grateful for that. People definitely donate money to us through our website or by sending a check throughout the year, and we just really appreciate that so much. But Empty Bowls is our one fundraiser where really the community comes together. And this year is going to return to Centennial Hall. The pandemic really kind of put a kibosh on Empty Bowls for a while. And it was very small, but before the pandemic, it was at Centennial Hall. Lots of people come. So many restaurants donate soups. There are so many amazing artists, bowl makers who donate bowls. People donate cookies. And so it's just like this big, wonderful way for the community to connect to one another and then help our neighbors who are really in need of help. So it is our only big fundraiser, or really our only fundraiser.
Yeah, that's great. And let me just remind people about the dates and everything. It's Centennial Hall. It's Sunday, April 21st. It's from 2 to 5:30 p.m. You're going to have some live music, and there's going to be silent and dessert auctions. And tickets are $60, which includes a bowl if you pay the $60 general admission. You can bring students or children for $15, but that price does not include a bowl. So, can you tell us a little bit about the bowls? Like, how many artists have been helping out sort of crafting these bowls for this year?
Yeah, so there's so many beautiful bowls this year. We have both ceramic and wooden bowls. And the Walker's Wyatt family has been very generous to coordinate all of the bowl making. And the bowls are really beautiful. And so, you know, a lot of people come early to the event so that they can choose the bowl that they want. Sometimes the wooden ones go really fast, but we're going to try to stagger them out this year. Yeah, but the bowls are very beautiful. They've gotten most of them in, dropped off by the artists right now, and they're just really, they're amazing.
So that's a good tip, though, because you do want to show up earlier. But I guess if you're also going to try to mitigate it by maybe putting them out in different, you're going to time it out a little bit, so you don't necessarily have to get there right at the top. But obviously, first come, first serve when it comes to the bowls.
First come, first serve. And also, if people were to pre-buy their tickets, when they wouldn't have to stand in line to get the ticket, then they could definitely have access to the bowls even earlier. And also, it would make us feel a lot better, and we would know when people are actually coming to this event, which would be wonderful.
It's interesting to be back in Centennial Hall right after, a couple of years, and it's like we're having this event. We want people to show up, but we know people will. People love Empty Bowls. And what kind of live music will you be having this year?
We are having some wonderful string orchestra music, and we are not completely sure about the lobby yet, but we will keep everybody posted.
Gotcha. Okay. And of course, there's going to be silent and dessert auctions as well. It sounds like a lovely event. It's empty bowls. Maria Lovacek has been here. Lovacek, to executive director of Juno Housing First Collaborative, telling us all about Empty Bowls, which is at Centennial Hall Sunday, April 21st. And it's going from 2 to 5 p.m. Tickets are $60. You get a bowl with that. You're supporting the Glory Hall Shelter and Soup Kitchen. It's their only fundraiser that they do in this way. And, of course, you can find out more information about the organization and Juno Housing First Collaborative at housejuno.org. And you can also call 586-4159 if you're in need of those services or if you know somebody who's in need of those services. That's a great place to start, is by calling 586-4159. And tickets to the event are available at jahc.org. That's the JAC's ticketing website. So, Maria, thank you so much for joining me all the way from this conference. I'll let you get back to it. We really appreciate you taking the time. Gunath Cheesh.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay. Talk to you soon. All right, up next, we'll get a preview of the Juno Audubon Talk tomorrow. Much more ado about marmots. It's happening tomorrow night. But first, a little bird note. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
This is Bird Note. I'm Ariana Rimmel. Well, that's my alter ego. Once a mild-mannered birder, I was bitten by a radioactive feather mite and became aviary, capable of transforming into any bird I've seen in my travels. My powers were put to the test recently when I heard on the radio that a local high school student had gotten lost exploring a cave with his class. The rescue team was struggling to find him in the maze of caverns. I remembered an amazing bird I saw in Thailand, the Himalayan swiftlet. These birds nest in caves, and they can echolocate like bats to find their way in the dark. The swiftlet's incredible echolocation might just save the day. I went to the cave as fast as I could. With the swiftlet's long, narrow wings, I sped through the labyrinth of tunnels, mapping it out with my clicks. Finally, the echolocation calls I sent out bounced off a shape that was distinctly unrock-like. I'd found the student.
Aviary.
I returned to human form and led the student back to the surface.
Thank you, Aviary.
I left happy to have saved another life and full of appreciation for the tiny swiftlet. Learn about the very real superpowers of birds on our website, birdnote.org.
This month, four lucky people will get the chance to win a pair of tickets to see Michael Franti and Spearhead performing this August 6th in Juneau. KTOO sustaining members will be automatically entered into the drawing, but everyone else is welcome to participate. Just go to ktoo.org and click on the giveaway link for contest rules and the entry form.
You're listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO, 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Ok Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Juneau Audubon Society is featuring much more ado about marmots with Link Olson tomorrow, April 11th at 6:30 p.m. out at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall, room 112. It's free and open to the public, as all Juneau Audubon Society events are. And so welcome now, Brenda Wright and Link Olson. Gunath Chisha Ye Adi. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Wasa Iati, how's it going?
Good to see you.
Thanks, Boston. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you in the studio. And I know we're also going to talk about something exciting that's kicking off in April. The field trips are beginning, but we'll get to that in just a little bit. But first, let's talk a little bit about marmots. So first of all, what is a marmot?
That's a great question. Marmots are actually the largest living members of the squirrel family, and more specifically, they're ground squirrels. And like all squirrels, they are mostly vegetarian. They hibernate, which not all squirrels do, but marmots are what we consider obligate hibernators, so you don't see them in the winter very much. There are a few exceptions to that. And that means they have to compensate for all that downtime by eating and being very active during the summer. So people in Juneau who spent any time in the Alpine are probably familiar with what marmots look like, what they sound like. They're very conspicuous, and that makes them very good study organisms, depending on the questions you're asking.
I see. Now, if I was a little blind, like I am, could I mistake a marmot for a large squirrel? Like, would I think, oh, that's a large squirrel, or...
These are big.
They're
squirrels.
Bigger. Okay, yeah. So they're big. They're like the big cousin or something.
Yeah, they're kind of fat cat size.
Okay. And okay.
Especially in the Alpine, in this part of the world, you're really not going to see many other squirrels. You get to different parts of Alaska. There are Arctic ground squirrels, which can get pretty big for ground squirrels, but you're not going to mistake a marmot for anything.
Okay, that's why I just want to make sure I understood that, because when you hear squirrel, you think of the ones that we see on TV or, you know, things like that. Like, but these are larger and much more. They're just in the squirrel family.
Exactly.
I see.
Exactly.
Okay.
They share a common ancestor with other squirrels and are a branch on the squirrel family tree. They've just gotten much, much bigger. And that's, in fact, one aspect of their development that we're studying, is how they manage to get as big as they do. And we think we know the answer.
Oh, really? Okay. So that's an interesting thing, because you were talking about what kind of questions we're asking. So what kind of questions are we asking about marmots? Obviously about this, in terms of how large they're getting.
Well, my group started studying marmots about 20 years ago when I came to Alaska and started building a research program with students and postdocs and collaborators, both at other universities as well as agencies here in Alaska. We started out just asking some very basic questions, including one of the most basic questions of all: where are they found in Alaska? Mm. And we have three species of marmots in Alaska, and we've worked on all three, although we focused more on two of the species that are predominantly alpine. And in Alaska, those include the Alaska marmot, which, as far as we know, is only found in the state of Alaska. It's primarily in the Brooks Range, but also gets into some of the more southern mountain ranges in interior Alaska. And then the marmot that most people in Alaska are probably familiar with is the hoary marmot, and that's H-O-A-R-Y, and that refers to sort of the frosted texture and color of their hair. And hoary marmots are what we have here in Juneau and throughout much of mainland southeast Alaska. We also have woodchucks, which are also known as groundhogs, and neither of their common names have marmot in it, but they are as much a marmot as hoary marmots or Alaska marmots.
Okay. I'm curious about the Alaska marmot. We don't have those in Juneau, though, right?
We don't. They were thought to be a Brooks Range endemic, endemic meaning they're only found there. But over the course of our studies, we documented them in a few other mountain ranges just north of the Yukon River in interior Alaska.
I see. What makes them is there something specific about what makes them different from, let's say, the hoary marmot?
Excellent question. When they were first discovered and described by Western scientists, they were considered a subspecies of the hoary marmot. And now, thanks to genetic and more recently genomic analyses, we know that they're only distantly related. They look, in general, like a hoary marmot. They're kind of a mottled gray color. They lack that frosted look that gives hoary marmots their common name. Mm. And critically, they don't have black feet. And so if you see a gray marmot with black feet in the Brooks Range, call me immediately, because it means it's a hoary marmot and they're not supposed to be up there. So that's the other important distinction here, is that hoary marmots and Alaska marmots are, are very similar ecologically, and they're not known to occur in the same place. So once you get north of the Yukon River in Alaska and up into the Alpine, if you see a marmot, it's an Alaska marmot. South of the Yukon, all the way down to Washington State, northern Idaho and Montana, a big gray squirrel in the Alpine will be a hoary marmot.
Okay, I see. And I'm curious, Link, how did you get involved in this kind of work?
I was interested in the questions, believe it or not. I came to UAF, University of Alaska Fairbanks, in fall of 2003, having spent much of the past 10 years studying small, obscure animals in the tropics and asking questions about biogeography, which is basically the study of the geography of nature. What aspects of the landscape, the geological history, influence where animals are found and how they evolve. And I was particularly interested in islands. And when I came to Alaska, actually before I applied for the job, I came up here on my honeymoon and backpacked in the Wrangell Mountains and started seeing hoary marmots, which I'd never seen, and thought, hey, these things occur on these alpine islands. This is an island-like setup, and I wonder if the same questions could be asked. And we ended up studying Alaska marmots, hoary marmots, and pikas, which are not closely related to marmots, but they're also alpine small mammals, and happened to luck into a series of grants and contracts with different agencies and some outstanding graduate students that really helped jumpstart things. I didn't come up here expecting to be a marmot biologist, but they really do lend themselves to multiple lines of scientific inquiry in ways that most other animals don't. And I'll just give you one example. The small obscure mammals I've been studying in the tropics now for 29 years, I can count the times I've seen them with my eyes just wandering around in the rainforest on my thumbs. Mm. Marmots are the complete opposite. If you don't see them, they'll make sure that you see them or hear them. They're conspicuous and vocal, and even if they themselves are not obvious to you, they leave telltale marks on the environment in the form of burrows, runways. When they excavate out through the snowpack up at higher elevations starting in about a month, they leave a really clear signature on the landscape. So they're easy to find.
Yeah, that's cool. And are they? Is what's their impact on sort of, I guess, what I say, the ecology or the sort of environment itself? Like, what is their impact if we didn't have them, or what do they bring us, or what do they bring to the environment? What is their purpose, I guess?
Well, I'm not going to answer the purpose part because that's a human construct, but their role in the environment, we're still sort of figuring out. Now, they're big 10 to 15 pound morsels of deliciousness if you're a carnivore or predatory animal. I have eaten marmot and I would pass if offered again, but those are my delicate palatal sensitivities speaking more than anything else. So they're important prey items for primarily golden eagles, where golden eagles are common, but anything that could catch and eat a marmot that eats meat will catch and eat a marmot. Hmm. They also turn over a lot of vegetable matter as they're eating and processing it. They are very prolific poopers, and they excavate the landscape itself by tunneling. But you asked a really good question, which is one of the reasons we're doing this right here in Southeast Alaska, because we have these large island land masses right off the coast, most of which do not have marmots, and it sets up a great natural experiment for looking at the differences in the ecosystem of these alpine areas. What happens when you don't have marmots on the landscape? Now, I'm not an ecologist, so that's really not where my mind tends to go. But in documenting which islands and mountain ranges have or do not have hoary marmots, it sets the stage for people who are interested in those questions.
Interesting. That is so cool. Well, it is called Much More Ado, which I'm assuming that means that you've done this before. And so we're having this is like a sequel. It's Much More Ado About Marmots. It's with Link Olson. It's tomorrow night at the Egan Lecture Hall, room 112. It starts at 6:30. It's free and open to the public. But that's not the only thing going on with the Juneau Audubon Society. Brenda, we have some fun things that are going to be starting up soon. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is the most exciting time of the year. There's a few migrants here. I'm sure you might have heard a robin or two by now. And there's more coming. So we're going to begin our bird walks this Saturday.
This Saturday?
This Saturday.
Oh,
and
wow.
And we're going to have them on either Saturday or Sunday all the way through June 15th.
Okay.
And we have different things on different parts of the schedule, especially as the more and more shorebirds and birds that are just passing through our area. We're going to go to different locations so we can see as many as possible of the migrants. And but the very first one is going to be at the Fish Creek Delta, and it's basically aimed at beginners. So if you'd like to learn more, please come this Saturday at 8 o'clock.
Awesome. 8 o'clock this morning, or not this morning, 8 o'clock on Saturday morning.
Yes.
And you won't have many folk festers from Friday night, probably.
Maybe not. But if
the
you
turnaround
come early,
time.
Yeah, if you come early in the morning, there's plenty of time to do the afternoon and evening.
That's true. No, I'm saying you could do, if you plan your Saturday, you do this first, and then
yes.
You go over to the afternoon session, because the walks usually take an hour or so, right?
Yeah, we plan to do it about 2 hours, but you're welcome to just stay as long as you like and stay later if you want to also.
Okay, and where do we find the whole schedule, or how do we find out more?
Yeah, it's on our Facebook page and also on our web page. Just check under events, and you'll see the entire schedule.
Okay.
We have most locations are all settled, but not all the leaders. But you'll be able to look at the calendar and know where to go each Saturday.
Yeah, and it's JunoAudubonSociety.org with dashes in between the words.
I didn't give you the right one because we just got a new web page.
Oh, you got a new web page.
Yeah, it's JunoAudubon.org.
JunoAudubon.org. No more dashes or anything.
No more dashes.
JunoAudubon.org. That's great. That's a good update. Yeah. Okay, great. And then your Facebook page, you can just Google Juno Audubon, or on Facebook, search for Juno Audubon and the page will come up.
Yep. And it'll come right up and just look under events in both places.
Oh, that's wonderful. And those start this Saturday.
This Saturday. And they're all in April. All of them start at 8 a.m.
And do you have different people who are leading the talks each week, and who's leading this week's talk?
Actually, this week it's two of the best birders in our Audubon Society. It's the Squires, Marcia and Owen Squires, are going to be leading the beginners walk.
Awesome, that's great. So the walks are coming, and they're going to be happening all spring through the middle of the summer, basically, which
yes.
is awesome. And then of course, Link's talk is tomorrow night. Much more ado about marmots. It's out at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. For more information, go to JunoAudubon.org or go on Facebook and search for Juno Audubon, and all the information will be there. So, Gwyneth Cheese, for coming in today, telling us all about it. Break a leg tomorrow on your chat.
Thank you. It's fascinating.
It's just fascinating stuff. It's really interesting. So, and that just means, you know what it means, too, is like spring is here. Right? Spring is here and all these wonderful things are happening. The sun is shining. I love it. Well, Gwyneth Cheese, for being here. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening. We'll do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a wonderful Wednesday. On tomorrow's show, Folk Fest Week continues, and we'll welcome to the studio this year's featured guest artist, Lori Lewis. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Folk Fest evening. Tune in on KRNN or KTO.org/folkfest.